Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From the Arizona Republic, Leafy, Lush, and Lovely. How to Pick the Perfect Tree for Your Yard by Sally Scalera. All trees grow larger over time, though how tall and wide will depend upon the species. Here are some very important things to consider before choosing and planting a new tree in your yard, especially large trees such as live oaks. When choosing a new tree, discover the mature height and spread of all the trees you are interested in to ensure enough space for the mature tree. Not only does the yard need enough room for the mature spread of the branches, but the root system also needs an adequate rooting area to produce a healthy, stable tree. Live oaks, when fully grown, can reach a spread of 60 to 120 feet. They will grow and look their best when they're in the center of a large open area away from power lines. Many developers and homeowners prefer to plant live oak trees, but other oak species do not get as large. Oaks are great because they are our number one keystone species, which are native plants, approximately 5% of them, that provide about 75% of the food for wildlife. This is especially helpful for migratory birds, which keep the terrestrial food web going, so getting smaller oak trees in small yards would be fantastic. The Chapman's oak only grows 6 to 15 feet, is deciduous, and produces attractive fall color. The evergreen sandhill oak typically grows as a shrub and can reach 16 feet tall with a 6-foot spread and grows in full sun to partial shade. The other portion of a tree that is typically not considered is the root system, which typically spreads 2 to 3 and sometimes 4 times past the ends of the branches. For example, say that a live oak tree stays on the smaller end and just spreads out 30 feet on either side of the trunk, producing the minimum 60-foot spread of the branches. As the roots develop, they will go straight out, when possible, to a distance of at least 60 and very likely 90 feet in all directions around the trunk. The ability of the roots to spread out that far is what can keep the tree upright during storms. If the yard is small, a live oak is not the right plant. With the spread of the root system in mind, that is why it is recommended to plant large growing trees at least 12 feet away from sidewalks, driveways, and roads so the roots won't cause any damage. Even this is not ideal because the sidewalks, driveways, and roads will keep the roots from spreading out as far as from the trunk as possible. Many neighborhoods have narrow sections of lawns between the sidewalk and road, so it's only a matter of time before the sidewalk, driveway, and/or street begins to lift or buckle. Damage from large woody roots can also occur to the foundation of homes, septic, and irrigation systems. If your yard is large enough to handle a live oak, be ready to provide the best care possible so that it can live a long, over 300 years, and healthy life. Because improper pruning harms trees, all large, over 50 feet, and medium, 25 to 50 feet size trees should be pruned by an ISA, International Society of Arboriculture Certified Arborist. For yards that cannot support a large tree, here are some more small growing trees to consider that grow in well-draining to dry soils. Scrub hickory, American hornbeam, flatwoods plum, shining sumac, and sparkleberry. If your yard stays moist wet, the two small trees you should choose from are swamp dogwood and the coastal plain willow. All these trees are also keystone species. Trees provide many benefits when the right tree is planted in the right place, so it's very sad if neighborhoods are removing trees and not planting new ones. So here are some reasons not to cut down a tree. They increase property values, possibly up to 20%. Improve the curb appeal of homes, can help lower energy bills, provide privacy from the road, provide shade, cool and clean the air, improve our well-being and health, and don't forget keystone species keep the terrestrial food web operating. New neighborhoods could look great in 5 years if the tree list residents can choose from is more diverse and they can plant small and or medium trees. Here's another article that appeared recently in the Arizona Republic, Tips for Choosing the Best Garden Tools and Maintaining Them by Maureen McCullough. Whether you're shopping for garden tools online or at a retail store, there are an overwhelming number of types and styles to choose from. Having the right tool for the task at hand can make a world of difference. While there are proper and improper uses of tools, there are no wrong personal choices of what works best for you. Taking some time to find the tools that are the most comfortable for you to use, in other words, size, shape, and weight, and are of good quality, will allow you to stick to a budget and use them for a long time. Some common and popular garden tools that will address most home gardeners' needs include spades, shovels, and hand trowels, leaf and garden rakes, hoes and mattocks, garden scissors, pruners, loppers, and pruning saws. There's also a slew of weeding tools from the hori-kori knife, cobra head weeder and cultivator, crack weeder, and of course, the time-worn dandelion digger. Weeding tools are often a necessity to properly remove stubborn roots and rhizomes, and any of these are good options. When selecting your garden tools, consider what you will need for the types of jobs in your garden or landscape. For example, hand trowels are good for small potting projects, but spades and shovels with their long handles are needed for bigger garden jobs such as soil work and plant moving. Metal and plastic leaf rakes work well for spring and fall cleanup of leaves and pine needles, but heavy garden rakes are needed for leveling yard and garden soil for planting. Cutting tools such as pruners, loppers, and plant saws need to fit the diameter of the woody plant branch, but garden scissors or shears are ideal for trimming and harvesting leafy foliage in the flower, herb, and vegetable garden. Some tools with multiple uses are especially meaningful in the garden, such as the hori-kori knife. This helpful tool is stronger than a trowel for breaking up compacted soil in small spaces, digging up weeds, digging holes, and measuring hole depth for planting flowers and bulbs. It can even saw through small branches if the knife side has serrated edges. Once you have selected the tools that best fit your gardening needs, routine care is crucial for optimum performance and preventing the spread of disease between plants. Best maintenance practices should ensure the longevity of the tool as well as a healthier garden. At the end of the gardening day, rinse your metal digging tools off with water and use a rag or wire brush to remove any caked-on soil. To help with cleaning and rust erosion, keep a bucket of sand moistened with plant-based oils such as linseed oil so that you can plunge your tools into the mixture. Hang your large tools or store them upside down in a dry shed or in your garage. Wipe off pruners, loppers, saws, and scissors after each use. And if there's any chance that the plant is harboring a disease, clean the tool with a 70% alcohol solution, a 10% bleach solution, or hydrogen peroxide to prevent any spread to the next plant. Allow them to air dry completely or towel dry them. You can also use disinfecting wipes to remove bacteria and fungi. Remove any sap with a solvent such as mineral spirits or turpentine and then clean the blades in soapy water, dry, and treat with linseed oil. To remove excess rust on any of your metal tools, soak the tool in a vinegar and water mixture 1:1 overnight. Scrub with steel wool in a circular motion. Rinse with soapy and then plain water, dry, and finally rub with linseed or mineral oil. Don't neglect your wooden handles. These should also be cleaned with a damp cloth after each use to remove dirt and debris. Sand whenever necessary to remove any splinters and wipe down with linseed oil or mineral oil at the end of the season to moisturize the wood and prevent splitting. Minor cracks in the wooden handles can be reinforced with heavy tape, but handles with large cracks should be replaced to avoid injury. As always, make sure to follow all solvent product directions on containers regarding the proper use and disposal of used rags, as incorrect storage could result in possible combustion and fire. Garden tools will need to be sharpened from time to time to maintain effectiveness and safety. The end of the season is usually a good time to take inventory and address any dull edges on tools such as hoes, shovels, and knives. Once you've cleaned your digging tools, a quick touch-up from a sharpening file followed by a sharpening stone will do the trick. Cutting or pruning with dull blades can result in cuts that are not clean, causing damage to branches and making them more susceptible to disease. You can keep your pruners and other cutting tools sharp with a specialized pruner sharpening tool or a sharpening stone. Push the file or sharpener in the same direction, not back and forth, across the blade and follow the original bevel angle, and then smooth the file edges with a sharpening stone. Be sure to wear protective eyewear and heavy gloves to avoid injuries to eyes and hands. While it is not necessary to take your cutting tools apart each time you sharpen, it is a good idea to clean, sharpen, and readjust during the year at the end of your pruning season. Whether you disassemble the tool or simply sharpen it, clamp the tool securely. If the blade moves while being sharpened, severe injury can result. Additionally, cutting tools may become out of alignment or bent, especially after tough jobs. You will know this if your blades are sharp but the cut is not smooth or tears your branch. Some local hardware stores also offer sharpening services and can help with cutting tool adjustments should you need assistance. Take your time to research the many tools available and their purposes in the garden. When possible, find multi-purpose tools. Ask other gardeners what they use, how they use them, and why. Find the tools that best fit your gardening needs, and remember, a little time spent maintaining your tools will make your work easier and more enjoyable, will extend the life of your tools, and most importantly, will keep your garden neat, tidy, and healthy. From the March issue of Arizona Highways magazine, here's an essay that was originally printed in the magazine in 1946. It's called It's Spring Again, written by Raymond Carlson. There was spring last year, the year before last, and the year before that, but spring is different this year. Peace has come to our people, and once again, as spring enters upon the scene, we can pause and note the seasons change, loiter with spring by the wayside, woo her in all her moods, merry or melancholy, across the broad, rich lands. We can play truant from care and raise our eyes to the far horizons and the tantalizing vistas of earth and sky wrapped in spring's flossiest lace. Clouds of war, sacrifice, and tribulation have passed. We can seek anew the beauty of the smiling land, discover the charm of the distant places, follow spring wherever she beckons, for there's magic and sorcery in her invitation to each and all of us. Spring comes early to our desert, while people in less sheltered climes lean shiveringly against the biting wind and winter's blast, the touch of spring is a real vibrant force in the desert. You can sense it in the evening air, warm and fragrant. It is in the rustle of the gray-green plants sending forth their blooms. It is the cactus, usually a forlorn-looking fellow, heralding the season with clusters of brightest hue. No florist could fashion a bouquet as gay as that of the Palo Verde in spring dress, yellow sunshine dancing before the soft wind. And the ocotillo, slender and long-limbed, pays tribute to the season with nosegays of the delicate purple, homage of a cavalier to his lady. Spring treads lightly and gently throughout the land, pausing in the foothills to bring the season's caress to the plant life dwelling there. There is work, too, in those hills. The smoke of the brand fires, drifting lazily skyward, marks the scene of the spring roundup. Winter is gone now, and it is time to get busy. The calves are young and frisky, and there is a shipping schedule to be met. It's spring, and you have to ride hard and long on the range. But your domain is far away and over the hills, and spring is with you everywhere. The season is a song, not pages in a calendar. It is the whispering of the young leaves in the sycamore and the cottonwood, the merry lilt of the mountain freshets breaking their bounds in the snowbanks. It is the quiet of evening in Monument Valley, the bark of a dog at a lonely Navajo hogan up in the Indian country. It is the deep rumble of the Colorado plunging through the chasm that is Grand Canyon, bulging with the spring flood released by waning winter from the high Rockies so far away. The river becomes vibrant and virile, exultant in the strength and life the season has given it. Yes, there is music in spring, a personal song for each person's taste. To each of us, spring in this smiling land is an exciting adventure. It may be a billowy cloud loafing around a mountain peak. It may be a lizard, a sunning on a rock, the blue of a canyon lake against red cliffs, a saguaro blossom, a cowhand sitting on a corral fence, or the turn of a desert road when the season beckons. It might just be loafing in the sun or a walk up a sandy wash. It might be the spell of the night sprinkled with moon dust or the peculiar twinkle of the stars lucky enough to people these western skies. Spring is little things, many friendly little things. This spring, for the first time in a long time, we can turn again to the land, marveling as we always do, at its vastness and beauty, seeking the distant places beyond the horizon. Following the vagrant paths, rediscover the charm that comes with spring. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week from the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This book is one of many in the Chicken Soup series devoted entirely to the subject of gardening, and it's made up of stories submitted by authors all over the globe, including some New York Times best-selling authors. This story is called Butter Beans and Bulldogs. It was written by Marion Bond West, and there's a quote here, or a Spanish proverb, "More in a garden grows than what the gardener sows." Butter Beans and Bulldogs. I shared so much with my husband, but not his passion for his vegetable garden. When we moved into the neighborhood in Lilburn, Georgia, back in the 70s, most everyone had a small garden. Jerry said that we should plant one, too. "No thanks," I declared. "I'm not a garden person." Undaunted, he went out and bought seed and an old used tiller and began to till a corner of our backyard. He was so optimistic, he even bought a small freezer for storing the bounty. I threw a couple of loaves of store-bought bread into the shiny new freezer, all I ever intended to contribute. Smiling, Jerry raved on about how great it would be to have homegrown vegetables year-round. "Who's going to pick them and put them in the freezer?" I asked, arms folded stubbornly. "You might learn to enjoy it one day," he said. Well, I knew better. Jerry spent countless hours in his garden. One night, when he had to work late, he came home and tended his tomato and bean plants by moonlight, whistling Blueberry Hill. I watched from an upstairs window, convinced he was wasting his time and energy. His garden was the talk of the neighborhood. Everyone came to marvel and sample. The green bean stalks were so tall, I had to look straight up in the sky to see the tops. The tomatoes were deep red, perfectly round and juicy. Everything grew well in Jerry's garden, but the butter beans were his favorite. Homegrown butter beans, some people call them limas, and the University of Georgia Bulldogs football team were two of the most exciting things in his life. I cared about football and the Georgia Bulldogs about as much as I cared about that darn garden. The years passed, and Jerry went on picking butter beans without me. Often our children helped him shell them, and together they placed package after package in the freezer with all the fanfare of people putting the Hope Diamond in a vault. In 1982, Jerry became sick rather suddenly. He'd always been incredibly healthy and assured me he was all right. Nothing unusual turned up on the tests at the hospital, but I couldn't shake the feeling that we were dealing with a biggie. On the fifth CAT scan, something showed up. Exploratory surgery revealed inoperable cancer had spread throughout his brain. Jerry and I had been together for 25 years, and I had no idea how I was going to live without him. I was so afraid I hardly ate or slept, barely talked, couldn't even cry. I just stared at my husband, willing him to hang on, begging God to let life make sense again. The doctors wouldn't permit Jerry to work or drive. After a while, he couldn't have anyway. Jerry went on like always, laughing, whistling Blueberry Hill, rooting wildly for the Bulldogs, playing with our collie, signing our twin sons up for Little League, and of course, tending his garden. He'd never been a worrier. I don't think he even knew how to worry. Never mind, I could do it for both of us. One day when we came home from one of his hospital stays and plopped down on the sofa, "What do you want to do?" I asked, staring straight ahead, thinking, "This can't really be happening." "I think the Bulldogs are playing," I said. "If you want, I'll watch the game with you." I turned to glance at Jerry. He gave me his big, easy smile. "I'm going to pick butter beans," he said, as if this were just another early autumn Saturday. I looked at him, really looked at him. He wasn't afraid. He didn't ask, "Why me?" He wasn't faking it. He wasn't even being brave for me. He was just very simply excited about his butter beans. He stood up to go outside, and I stood too. "I'll go with you," I said, still terrified of what my future held without him. "You don't like to pick butter beans," he exclaimed, and then he burst out laughing like he always did when he was really happy, his arms resting on my shoulders. I changed my mind. I'd never wanted to do anything so much in my whole life as pick butter beans with my husband. Out in his tall green garden, we went to work under the broiling Georgia sun. Creepy things crawled over my feet. I'm sure I saw at least one snake. I got so hot I saw spots, and my back, arms, and legs ached. I sweated, but every time my gaze met Jerry's, he smiled enormously. Once he winked at me, and finally he announced that we were through and in the garden, and we carried our reward inside. Sitting at the kitchen table, Jerry and I began shelling the huge mound of butter beans. I could do this every day for the rest of my life and be happy and content, I suddenly realized as my eyes lingered on my husband's large, square, freckled hands easing the beans out of their shells. Jerry left this life the following summer. We still had some of those butter beans in the freezer. The memory of that hot early fall day we picked them together has stayed with me, one of the highest points of our long marriage. It helped give me the strength to go on, to see that the life God has given me made sense after all. And now I love gardens. I have a small plaque that says, "Life began in a garden." For me, courage began in a garden, the courage to face life without my partner. It was a tiny seed at first. But like everything, in Jerry's garden, eventually it grew and thrived. That's called Butter Beans and Bulldogs, written by Marion Bond West, one of the many stories that make up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. From the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension, start with healthy soil. Starting with healthy soil is crucial for a successful garden. A soil test is an effective way to understand the needs of your gardening site as you are beginning a new plot, repeating every 3 years to verify good soil health. Soil tests are easy and affordable. A list of testing facilities can be obtained from the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension Office. Keep in mind that home soil tests are not as accurate as lab testing. An affordable basic soil test will usually include nitrate, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and sodium, as well as pH and EC, electrical conductivity. Healthy soil is essential for establishing strong tomato seedlings. Good soil preparation will assist in the growth of deep root systems, which the plant needs for adequate water and nutrition throughout the season. Encourage rapid growth by preparing the soil in February ahead of planting your seedlings. Soil fertility should be moderately high, but not out of balance with too much nitrogen, which can burn delicate roots and slow plant growth. Amending with too much nitrogen reduces fruit production and makes for lush leaf growth. Generally, a plant well fertilized early in its life will not need to be fertilized after the first fruit is set. At planting, water each seedling with 1 pint of an ammonium phosphate solution, 1 tablespoon ammonium phosphate per gallon of water. Phosphorus is crucial for fueling chemical reactions during the plant's life cycle. When adding phosphorus to crop plants, it should be applied at the root zone where it will be most available to the plant for uptake. Choosing the right site. Select a warm, sheltered part of the garden for tomato seedlings. Planting in a location that is too hot with no relief from direct summer sun will make your plants more susceptible to curly top and sunburn. The vector for curly top is the leafhopper. These pests thrive in direct sun more often than shade, as well as areas with bare ground. Providing adequate mulch and covering with a shade cloth of 40 to 60% can discourage leafhoppers and prevent sunburn. Skip pruning tomatoes in the low desert. Leaves provide necessary shade for the fruits. Close planting allows the plants to shade themselves. Plant spacing. If planting in ground, space rows about 2 feet apart and plants 18 to 24 inches apart in the row. Plant shelter and support. Tomato cages can be used for support and shelter. Clear plastic can be attached to the cage in the cool early days of the season for a greenhouse effect until the weather warms. This plastic can be removed, leaving the cage for support to the growing plant. A cardboard box can supply an inexpensive shelter from cold temperatures also. Row covers can be used to protect plants from seasonal frosts and to get an early start in the spring or extend the season in the fall. A floating row cover is often referred to as a frost blanket or a frost cloth. A row cover is called floating because it can either lay right on top of the plants or put on a frame above the plants. It is made of a lightweight fabric available in several weights that can raise the temperature underneath it by 2 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit higher than the ambient temperature. Once it's installed, it does not need to be removed until risk of frost has passed. Water, air, and light are able to penetrate the material. And an option, an old sheet can be used for short-term frost protection. However, it isn't as permeable as a purchased frost cloth, so it should be removed periodically for proper ventilation, moisture, and sun exposure. Providing good support is an important strategy for disease control. Keep the leaves and fruit off the ground, but allow the plant to bush out. A good support can be made by encircling the plant with a cylinder of construction wire 3 or 4 feet tall and 2 to 3 feet across. The branches grow through and are supported by the 6-inch squares. Purchase supports such as tomato cages or stakes are also effective. Shade cloth can be draped over the frame to give shade and discourage leafhopper infestations. Planting out in the garden. After choosing the site and performing an initial soil test, follow the recommendations given in the test report. If amendments are necessary, work them into the top 6 inches of soil. If adding compost, apply 2 to 3 inches of well-composted organic matter per 100 square feet a month before planting, working it into the top layer of garden soil. These improvements will ensure the soil has good water-holding capacity, nutrient density, drainage, and aeration. Building and maintaining rich, healthy soil is crucial for growing healthy, productive plants. Optional. A small amount of worm castings can be added to the bottom of every planting hole. Worm castings are a microbially active amendment that can give plants a boost, improve soil structure, and increase moisture retention. Worm castings can be purchased or obtained from a worm compost bin. Deep planting up to the first set of true leaves or side planting will allow for greater root development and more robust plants. Tomatoes can be grown in containers such as 5-gallon buckets or grow bags. This gives some seasonal flexibility by allowing containers to be moved into shade in hot summer months and to a more sheltered area in winter. And that's a Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy. And we'll be talking with you soon.